Hey, what it do, what the business is?
It's another week in the books with the On Deck TV podcast. I am Spike Lou.
Man, holla at your boy Animal Brown, Animal underscore Brown on Twitter and Instagram.
I am Spike Lou on the same social sites.
Hey, man, coming up on today's show, Nicki feuds with Meek, J Electronica finally gets a release date, and we rap with serial entrepreneur Snoop about her journey and what it's like working with 2 Chainz. But first, woo! Hip Hop responded to Gayle King's questioning of Kobe Bryant's past case while interviewing Lisa Leslie last week. Snoop Dogg was the loudest. He expressed his disappointment with Gayle, calling her out her name and doing what some perceived as making threats. Now, Snoop's rant even prompted some celebrities to come to her defense. My question to you, was Hip Hop's response to Gayle King too harsh?
I don't think so. I think the energy that she put out was warranted. I think that Lisa Leslie, who she was having the interview with, was good friends with Kobe. She did the best job that she could with the question she was asked when she, out of the blue, asked her about Kobe's rape allegations. And Lisa Leslie kind of was like, nah, I never seen that. And then Gayle kind of went out of her way to poke the bear, and that's what people were mad about. That's the energy that people were responding to. So, I mean, people are saying that they're mad at Snoop calling her a dog-faced bitch or whatever it may be, and that's hilarious, by the way, stringing those cuss words together that he did.
Yeah, it was funny.
But she put that energy out there. Like, Snoop is not Michael Eric Dyson, man. I'm not expecting some elaborate soliloquy with marvelous words in reference to Gayle King. I'm expecting him to call her a dog-faced bitch because that's the energy she put out. And I don't know whether it's right or wrong, but at least she put that out there for
you. Yeah, see, and when I seen Snoop's response, and he started off kind of tame. He was like,
got to him,
am bro. I going to do it? Are y'all going to make me say it? And so I was thinking he was going to take the high road. He didn't. He went on ahead and got down in the mud with her, which is fine. When you do certain things out there, then you can't necessarily police how someone else responds to it. But I knew as soon as he said what he said, that was going to screw up the message and people were going to hang on to that particular statement of what he said, and that was going to fuck up and muddy the message. That's my only thing. If Snoop could do it all over again, I think he would have chose his words differently so that people can actually pay more attention to the issue, which is what Gayle King was doing when she was bullshitting, as then paying more attention to his response and how harsh or, you know, threatening it was, so to speak.
And the issue meaning how she was talking about Kobe or just...
Yeah, just kind of the distaste in bringing up those allegations with Kobe, and then kind of what, and Oprah was brought into it with their questionable tactics when it comes to certain things that they put their name behind. That's what the problem
was. And I think that's why people are so upset about it, and that's why hip-hop responded the way that it did with such vitriol, is because you had a documentary about Russell Simmons.
Right.
You had a documentary about Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Monique comes out and says, hey, are you specifically targeting black men? Because you're buddy-buddy with the other people like Harvey Weinstein. Like, all of that's low-hanging fruit. And the fact of the matter is, if your name wasn't attached to all that, then maybe people see that and they give Gayle the benefit of the doubt and say, hey, she may have been having a bad day. But nah, you tied in all the other bullshit, so people not giving you the benefit of the doubt, and that's the type of energy she getting.
That's the problem.
And
that's
she got that resting bitch face, too, like Maxine Waters. Like, you never know. You can't never just be like, ah, she joking, or like, you never know. Just
Maxine,
like,
Waters has seen a lot, though.
True.
So, you know, listen.
She's an old soul.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. True. She done seen some shit. So
Gayle ain't got no excuse, though.
They tripping.
She got enough money to get that fixed.
They tripping with the questioning. I ain't like that.
Facts. So, next, Nicki Minaj just dropped a new single.
Mm-hmm.
What was the name of the single?
Yikes.
Yikes. I knew that. I just want to see the Juno.
I'm deep.
So, with that being said, prior to the single dropping, Nicki Minaj takes at Meek Mill, and they have a Twitter back and forth. Who better to promote your new single with the Mr. Twitter Fingers himself? Do you think this was planned by Nicki, or was it spur of the moment?
Listen, the new single, Yikes, Queen Radio is back. She throws out crazy headline-worthy accusations at her ex-boyfriend, who they just ran into not too long ago with her new boyfriend or husband, whatever they are, and there was a little bit of an altercation. Man, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck, dude, it's probably a duck. This reeks of free promo for a single that nobody was looking forward to up until this point. They throwing the back and forth was nuts. They throwing out, Nicki throwing out accusations of Meek putting his hands on women, Meek bringing up Nicki's brother who was convicted of rape of an 11-year-old. Like, they're hitting all the hot button topics of this decade, and it was too much. I had to clock out. Like, man, y'all are doing way too. I don't know what's going to come next, dude.
Meek, she said to Meek, hit her?
She said that he put his hands on women. That was it. Look, man, I don't know.
I ain't gonna lie. I'd take Nicki and Meek and Nicki fight. Like, I was, I could not see him beating her up. I just don't see that. I mean, yeah, I agree with you.
Free promo.
Tough. I agree with you. I think that she started this. It's gotten to this point for Nicki as to where these things have to accompany her music for people to talk about it. It can't just be Nicki Minaj putting out some fire-ass stuff. And even with the music, she got a controversial thing with the Rosa Parks thing where she said, I ain't apologizing. And with the Rosa Parks line, it was iffy at best. Like, right. I mean, I didn't like too much about it. But with that being said, like, everything has to accompany her rolling out, man. It's just like, it's tasteless. And I think it speaks to where her career is and why she's having so much trouble staying afloat. Like, I don't think that she's conducting herself as people wanted to see her progress to. Like, you're not Nicki Minaj like 10 years ago. Like, you were 38-year-old woman. Like,
right, you're grown.
You shouldn't be carrying yourself like the competition, which is Cardi B. Like, she's in that stage of her life. You're not. And I think people are getting that same feeling from her they got 10 years ago, and it's stale. So she keep trying different things to get that fresh feeling, and it ain't happening.
This gives us something to talk about on Queen Radio, dog. Like,
that's what still come on?
Yeah, it just dropped this week.
Did you listen to it?
No.
Of course. of course you did.
No, nigga, I ain't listening to that.
Of course you did.
That's for you. I'm going to let you have that one.
What's she talking about?
Nothing. But
you didn't listen to it.
Nah, my God. You know what she's talking about. This Meek shit had to come up. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's just, bro.
So she dropped one of these every time she getting like a beef or something, huh?
Slick. Real slick.
I mean, Nicki is going to be successful post-rap career. I thought she retired anyway, right?
Allegedly. I think she's back, though.
She need to go ahead and just do this. She can drop a podcast every week.
That'll be popping, though, real talk.
People to listen to that.
You'll listen to it.
No, absolutely would not. But it would be successful. She can interview people. It's funny. She could do a personalities thing. I could put that together for you.
Let me know how it sound when it drop.
Uh-huh.
Next up, man, we've got Jay Electronica album news, man. According to Jay Electronica himself, the album is done and is dropping soon. He tweeted out, quote, recorded over 40 days and 40 nights, starting from December 26th. Releasing in 40 days, a written testimony, end quote. Now, fans have been waiting on his debut album since his single Exhibit C dropped in 2009. Where's your anticipation level for this Jay Electronica album?
Is there anything below zero? Negative, nigga, freezing, Antarctica, nigga. Like, at this point, and the reason that I say that is not because Jay Electronica is not a talented rapper. We all know that he can rap his ass off. Like,
for sure.
At this point, bro, if you pump fake so many times, just shoot the shot. Like, you just got to Beyonce it. You just got to drop it. It's got to be there on streaming sites. I don't need a 40-day disclaimer saying your album's coming that people have been waiting on for 11 years. Like, come on, fam. Like, I'm not hype about it because I don't even believe that it's coming out. But Jay-Z went and favored it all the tweets.
There you go.
So he's supposed to have it on there.
Okay.
Joe Budden reached out to Just Blaze. He said he couldn't comment on it, which lets you know that something's brewing. But, I mean, it would be great. Nice little moment for hip-hop. But until it drops, like, I'm tired of Jay Electronica pump faking.
Bruh, listen. So
You hype about it. Yeah,
you know damn well I'm not hype about it. Look,
hype.
The same thing that you said, we get it, he can rap, no doubt. He was supposed to have the whole Just Blaze produced album hella years ago, and this would have been a huge moment right after Control, maybe like 2014. This would have been a huge moment. In 2020, though, bro, I don't think it's going to make no waves, bro.
It's still a big moment, though. Don't
no,
do that.
No, it's not, bro. Yes. Like,
who coming out in the next 40 days?
This year going to be stupid.
This
Drake
year,
and Future
I'm talking
might
about
come
the
out?
Next 40 days, though.
Yeah, because they say, like, March 18th is when it's supposed to come out.
It wasn't a bad idea to say this. Me, personally, I'm tired of it. But, I mean, within this 40-day span, ain't no big dogs coming out. So it's still going to be a big moment. Do you like Jay Electronica?
As an artist?
Right, yeah. Like, are you checking for this when it drops?
I'll listen to it, yeah. I mean, I listen to everything. But I'm not hype about it.
You're not hype about it.
No, not now.
The six Jay-Z features, whatever.
He did say Jay was on
there. Jay definitely is going to be on there.
I'm going straight to the Jay song, though. Let's be very clear about that.
Brand new Jay verse is going to be on there for you. 100%. New Jay, if anything, you're excited about a new Jay verse in 40 days.
I'll take that. Okay. The other Jay-Z.
What were you about to say about Jay Blaze? Just Blaze?
Now, if he was doing the whole thing, I'd be interested. Like, he need to speak up.
He didn't say that he wouldn't.
I need him to.
He said he couldn't confirm
it.
Or deny it.
That mean he ain't on it.
No,
that mean
it's
all
not
shit,
me. It mean he's probably doing the whole thing. He got an NDA.
That mean all the shit that he did when it was supposed to come out 10 years ago was probably old and dated, and so he not
so
backing
it. It. Just Blaze ain't doing nothing.
Just Blaze be moving,
dude. I mean, if Jay Electronica hit Just Blaze up and be like, "All right, I'm ready," he's stopping everything that he's doing
in 06 for sure.
Now today, like who else he gonna like? Come on.
Yeah.
You waiting on Griselda to call him?
That'll be hard, though.
It would. I'm waiting on Griselda to call Just Blaze, actually. So, here recently, gang activity from Future's son was reported on the news.
And
Future responded, and he said that he's going to provide the best defense possible for his son. Son 21 years old, I think. And was, you know, busted for the gang activity. My question to you, Future's response enough saying that he will provide him with the best defense possible?
If I am 17, 18, 19, and I get busted for felony, fill in the blank, and my rich dad says, I'm going to provide the best counsel possible, the best money that lawyers can buy, nigga, there's nothing else that I need other than that. I don't know what Future's supposed to do besides dig a tunnel and break me the fuck out, besides that. So, yes, if I am him, the young boy got in trouble, possession of a firearm and falsifying IDs to police and all this type of shit. Some stuff that I'm sure Future can make a couple phone calls. He can drop a couple bags if need be, and he can get him clear of this situation. So, yeah. Did he do enough by saying, I'm on it? Nigga, yes, he did. So, I don't know what else you're looking for.
So, Jacoby Wilburn, criminal use of an article with altered ID mark, possession of a firearm and giving a false name, address, and birth date to law enforcement officers. He was arrested in Newton County, Georgia.
Where the hell is that?
Newton County? I have no idea. I'm not a Georgia native. So he doesn't have that high of a bail. Well, he's going to be tried as an adult.
I think that's what they're fighting.
So that's what they're fighting, him being charged as an adult. Yeah, I mean, for him to come out and say, I want to provide the best defense possible, yes. Again, we go back to track records, though, like we were saying with Oprah and Gayle. It's only because that he has such a bad record of being a father that he would even get backlash for this happening to his son. Like, bad thing. People make mistakes, especially as teenagers. This doesn't sound like he was out being egregiously.
It wasn't a violent crime.
Yeah, they said he had gang ties, and that's why they made it a big deal. But yeah, I mean, I respect for Future coming out and saying this.
Why was Future catching heat?
Future was catching heat, I mean, because his son is going to jail behind, you know, and that what he raps about and the lifestyle that he portrays. It's a direct reflection in your family. So
gotcha.
He was getting heat for that and what he does and what he talks about. And should he switch up the message or maybe address it in his music or carry it that way forward?
Yeah, we know that's not going to happen.
Nah,
Future not addressing nothing personal. Only to a certain extent.
Do you think that faults him in today's? Think it faults him not addressing personal stuff?
Nah, bro. He's a vet. He's not a new artist.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? He was grandfathered into this social media era, so he doesn't have to change, so to speak. That's why people like Cole. That's why people like Kendrick. They don't have to play those new rule games if you're a new artist. If you're a new artist, you need to be vlogging every day. Just like, shout out Kodak, our guy Jay Wilson. You need to be in front of the camera all day, every day on live and a whole bunch of, man, Future ain't got to do that shit.
That's a fact.
He ain't got to do that. He drop once every 9 months, nigga, and go on tour and keep it moving.
That's a fact.
Free Jacoby, though. Listen, guys. So we're taking a quick break. We have a very special guest with us, who is Snoop. Super dope entrepreneur. Y'all don't want to miss this.
True.
What's going on, ODEC TV listeners? This your boy, Big Jeff, from the Full Sport Press Podcast, featuring myself, J-Hove, and Weezy each and every Monday. Once you're finished with this action-packed episode of the On Deck TV Hip Hop Podcast, make sure you check out the Full Sport Press episode 307. We'll break it down the NBA trade deadlines, winners and losers. And as always, we're doing it FSP style. So make sure you tell a friend.
We are back. See you on Deck TV Podcast. It's your man, Animal Brown.
I am Spike Lou. We got a special guest in the house tonight.
Absolutely, man. One that needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway. We have a serial entrepreneur in the building. I like what you did with that. Owner of the Hookah Hideaway, ATL members only, business partners with 2 Chainz on Escobars, Remedy Salon Suites. We have Michelle Snoop Dillard in the building. What's good, Snoop?
Thank you, man. I appreciate y'all having me.
Of course, man, definitely.
Now, of course, this is a hip-hop podcast, and we'll get to the business dealings with Chainz and all of that good stuff. But first, we want to get to know who Snoop is, first and foremost. You have Serial Entrepreneur in your IG. What does Serial Entrepreneur mean? Put me on. I'm not familiar.
All right, so Serial Entrepreneur is just I'm a entrepreneur in a plethora of different industries. So as you were saying, definitely the hospitality industry. I've got 4 different restaurants and lounges here in Metro Atlanta, 2 Escobar locations, 1 downtown, 1 on the south side. I also own Crave Restaurant, which is in Little Five Points. And as you mentioned, Members Only, which is also downtown as well. I'm in the technology industry. I've got an app called Girl Talk. I'm also in the beauty industry with Remedy Salon Suites. And looking to get back into the transportation industry as well. So I'm kind of coined myself a serial entrepreneur because even before doing this, I've owned many other businesses and done many other things, you know, in different industries. So jack of all trades, I guess.
Damn.
Was it one of those things where you knew you'd like to do a lot of different things, so you just put your head in and whatever take off, or did you have a focus on one day I want to open a restaurant?
You know, I think what it was is just kind of doing a lot of little different things that led me to this path, you know what I'm saying? Like, as a kid, I always was kind of like, you know, I wanted to own a lot of different businesses, but did not necessarily know, you know, what industry. It wasn't like I was always like, oh, I want to own a restaurant or different things of that nature, so... but I tried my hand at different things, which, you know, led me down this path.
What does that entrepreneurial spirit come from? You said as a kid you wanted to own different businesses.
Yeah. I don't know. I think just by, like, nature, you know, I have it. I'm an Aries, which I always talk about. You know, we the first sign of the zodiac, so I feel like, you know, just leaders by nature.
Absolutely.
Definitely. I got 2 younger brothers, so I'm the, you know, first born child in the family. I started school when I was 3, originally from Detroit, you know, which is like hard knock, you know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So I think just, you know, a compilation of those things.
Okay. Let's talk about how you kind of got to this point. Let's take it back just a little bit. Originally from Detroit, but moved to Nashville for school, right?
Yeah, so I moved to Nashville. My family, my mom and my 2 brothers, we moved to Nashville when I was in the 8th grade. So I've got quite a bit of history in Nashville, Tennessee.
What schools did you go to in Nashville?
So for high school, so I went to Rosa Parks for middle school. For high school, I went to McGavick, graduated in 01. And then for college, I went to Vanderbilt University, graduated in 05.
You smart, man.
Now, you went early, didn't you?
I did, yeah. I went to college when I was 16. Graduated at 20.
Now, okay. In Nashville, I read you had a plethora of businesses that you started there, starting with the Wet Dimes. Tell us a little bit about the early days in modeling agency.
Absolutely. So Nashville is kind of like where I got my first taste, of course, of getting out there as an entrepreneur. When I graduated from Vanderbilt, I immediately took, you know, the corporate road, of course, you know, going to a top 20 Ivy League University. I had got a degree in economics. But, you know, while I was in school, I realized that there were some different things that I was interested in, you know, as far as entertainment and different things of that nature. But anyway, still, you know, went down that corporate path. I became a financial advisor. And so I was literally dressing in suits and different things like that, you know, every day. And you know, I enjoyed it. I learned a lot. I'm not going to say I loved it, you know, but I definitely enjoyed it, learned a lot, started doing real estate. And then it was just kind of like, you know, the trajectory of my life changed. You know, I ended up meeting this girl that I was dating. She was modeling. And we decided to do a calendar called Wet Dimes in the Key. And in the Key, you know, that's for you know.
Absolutely.
And so the Wet Dimes were the models. I'm always trying to take things to the next level. So it was like I couldn't just do a calendar, you know. Then I got to open up a whole modeling agency. So that was Profitable Productions, which is the entertainment company that I own that produced the calendar. And so after producing a calendar, it was like, okay, well, we got to sell this thing and make money out of it. How are we going to push it and get it out there? So that was one of the reasons why I wanted to, I ain't going to say control the models, but manage them so sure. that I would be able to have them at my disposal to help with promo and different things of that nature. And some of these girls, you know, had never modeled before. Like, we literally was, like, walking around the malls in Nashville trying to find, you know, nice-looking women and different things of that nature. Had to search high and low.
Good luck. Good
luck. Luck of the draw. But yeah, so and then I also started managing artists, you know, as well. Had a couple artists that I managed in Nashville. But with pushing a calendar, that's what led me to get into promotions and promoting. And so then I started promoting and eventually opened up my first club at the age of 24 in Nashville, Tennessee.
Nice.
Now, I find it interesting that you say after Vanderbilt, you stumbled into these things. Do you think that the structure of college helped you change from like seeing these things as hobbies and doing them that way and approaching them not with a business mindset, as opposed to, like you said, when I start my calendar, I'm starting an agency, I'm getting everything lined up from a business aspect,
right,
as being lackadaisical and taking it, it's like it's something I'm doing.
Right. Well, for me, nothing I ever do is really like a hobby, you know, other than just like working out, playing basketball, you know, in my younger days. But like if I'm doing anything where I'm putting my money towards it, you know what I'm saying, I'm definitely like taking it, you know, seriously, you know what I mean, with the utmost business mindset. But I think that, you know, a lot of times, like when you go to college, you know, I think like with our generation, you know, we have parents and stuff that come from that background of like stability, you know what I'm saying? So having a job where you've got a set salary, benefits, different things of that nature. And, you know, my mom, she definitely looked at me like I was crazy, you know, in the earlier days, kind of like, you know, like, what are you doing? You know, you got a degree from Vanderbilt. You know, I had initially, you know, like I said, started doing financial advising, real estate. I was very successful in doing it, you know, had bought a really nice house. And but also another thing, too, that had happened was, you know, in 2008, you know, we had that whole basically, you know, like a recession, you know what I'm saying? And so I lost a lot of money. I lost a lot of property, a lot of different things of that nature. And I think that that was another thing, too, that allowed me to be able to step out and say, okay, I'm going to kind of try my hand at something else. You know what I'm saying? So
you would think people would be scared at that time when the market is kind of doing what it was doing to step out and do something else. What take me back when you're doing the calendar or whatnot. Were you still working a corporate gig, too?
No, I wasn't. I was really loving what I was doing in the entertainment stuff, and I ended up totally stepping away, you know, from the corporate stuff.
Did corporate America make it able for you to be able to do that, like have a little something to fall back on and be good as to where you ended, like, man, I got to
Well, sell. I always felt like, you know, I had my degree, you know what I'm saying? And if I needed to fall back, you know, on it, then I could.
Yeah, we remember the Wet Dimes, man. We did a video for y'all a long time ago. 06, maybe?
Yeah, 06, 07, that sound about right. Yeah, that do sound about right. Yeah,
we done came full circle. We down here in Atlanta. It's crazy.
Long way.
Crazy, man.
So in 08, so, okay, let's fast forward a little bit. When the market crashes, you switch up your mind frame. What's the next business venture after that?
So the next business venture, so I had opened up a small club in Nashville. I also had another little spot called the Kitty Cabin. I was doing all type of stuff.
Hey, Lou, you spoke from experience, like you know what that's about.
But yeah, pretty much after that, you know, market crash, all that stuff, the club, you know, it was my first, you know, run at it. It wasn't done right, so it was shut down pretty quickly. And so after that, it was kind of like, okay, well, what am I going to do next? And so what I ended up getting into, I know y'all probably remember back in the day, them newspapers they used
Called
to have
magazine.
Of like, yep, uh-huh, yep. So I ended up doing it. I actually had one in Nashville. It was called Face It. But the guy that I did it with, he quickly like started stealing from the company and different things of that nature. So I totally walked away from that. Within like the first couple months, just let him
elaborate
have it.
On what
yeah,
it
how
was.
How did y'all have an idea for that?
So how we came up with that idea, we were actually on a trip, just kind of like on a random little trip in Chattanooga. Had ran up there for a couple of things, and we were in the gas station, and one of the guys, he had, I didn't go into the gas station, but he had went in, and he seen the magazine, the little magazine on the counter, and the clerk was telling him, like, you know, he was just asking, he was like, you know, do these really be selling like that? And she was like, yeah, man, they be flying off the shelves like hotcakes, you know what I'm saying?
So what Face It magazine is when the mugshots that are taken.
Of people been arrested, yep. So it was a weekly publication of mugshots of people that had been arrested each week, and it had the charge and different things of that nature.
Did y'all run into legal issues?
Not at all, because you know that information is public, you know, public knowledge. And so, when he told me about it, you know, it was kind of like on my like I couldn't even sleep, you know, that whole night. So I was like, yeah, you know, this might work. And so, long story short, you know, did it with him, didn't work out with him. I did it on my own, and I ended up having 5 different publications all around the southeast part of the country. Because, like, when I do something, I go hard. So, decided it was successful. I started doing it in Knoxville since he had already had Nashville. And I went to Western Kentucky. I went to Louisville, came down to Florida, came down to, did it in Tallahassee. And eventually, when I moved to Atlanta, so that was the business that I had when I moved to Atlanta. Eventually, when I moved to Atlanta, I did it here as well. But one thing that I will say about that business, that's one of the only things that I ever done that I wasn't proud of. You know, because, I mean, I've had a record myself, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And so, I was always kind of embarrassed to tell people that that was my magazine, you know what I'm saying? And it's really important that when you're doing something that you have to, like, totally love it, you know, and be proud of it. And I definitely was not proud of it.
And those were a dollar, right?
Yeah.
Can I ask what type of money you was making off of it? I'm curious.
Not a crazy amount of money, you know what I'm saying? I probably was doing maybe like 60 grand a year.
Okay, yeah. Gotcha.
I didn't really have to do a lot, you know what I mean? I probably worked like 2 days a week, you know what I'm saying? So I was comfortable.
Yeah, no doubt. Mm-hmm. Fast forward, you said you moved to Atlanta. What year was that?
So I moved to Atlanta. It was around 2010. Then I moved to Atlanta. So I've been here for about 10 years now. Moved here and got here, and I was just really intrigued by the Atlanta culture, by how many successful Black people, you know, that you see on a daily basis. And it just, you know, it just seemed like nobody was working. You know what I mean? Like, everybody was out.
During the day.
Everybody, always, you know, during the day.
Everybody pulled to Atlanta. I did the same thing for me. I was like, people got jobs.
Yeah, you know, everybody had an expensive car. Yep. I noticed that Black people spent money very frivolously here. You know, everywhere has valet and, you know, all these type of things. You know what I'm saying? And so I was very intrigued by the culture and just getting to know the city and the different things here and the opportunities. And so I kind of started slacking on the paper a little bit, and I allowed the guy that was kind of like the manager that I had hired to really take over things, and he eventually kind of stole the business from me right up under my nose. And so that was how I ended up losing that business, and it taught me a lot of lessons, you know, about taking your hands off of things and, you know, different things of that nature. But after I lost that business, you know, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I was dating this girl that was very successful at the time. She had a boutique in Little Five Points. And I remember at one time, you know, my daughter was outside selling bottles of water. I was inside selling $5 smoothies. And I was actually just telling this story on my Instagram last night. But, you know, I even had, that was when Rick Ross had that song out with the line, you know, you wasn't with me shooting in the gym, you know, dedicated to, you know, rest in peace, Kobe. Yep. And I had actually made some t-shirts, you know, that had that slogan on there with the little NBA, you know, logo and stuff. And so those that did well, but just was, you know, trying to find my way, you know, and figure things out, you know, after, you know, losing it all. And that had been the second time in my life that I had lost it all, you know what I mean? And was faced with trying to get back off my feet and decide what I was going to do next.
Other than the person you were dating, did you have any other circle or resources down here?
Not really. You know, my brother, he lived here, but we weren't like super close at the time, and he was traveling a lot and different things of that nature. But no, you know, that was really, and she was, you know, very supportive of me and stuff like that. We ended up later opening up a party bus company together. But yeah, no, really didn't have anybody. It was definitely like a rough first couple years. It seemed like I just like was continuously like getting arrested for stupid shit. Like, forgetting about going to court, you know what I mean? So Just stupid stuff, you know, just was going through one of those storms, you know, one of those periods, you know, that you go through that it's like, you know, you can't see the end, you know what I mean? But once you come out of it, you know, you appreciate the struggle, you know what I'm saying? Because that's what helps you value success, you know, even more.
Yeah, that makes sense. Now, with the business partner for Caught Up, you said that he stole it right from under you.
Yeah, so he wasn't the business partner. He was actually the manager.
So was it a conversation, a confrontation? How did that happen as to where, like...
So pretty much how that happened is, you know, he had a lot of control, a lot of leeway. So he was helping, you know, collect all of the money and stuff like that. So number one, he stopped depositing the money into my account. Two, there was one week in particular that basically, so starting that Monday, everybody just started quitting. You know, so the guy that was laying out the newspaper, he quit. Then some of the carriers that was, you know, going and, you know, collecting the money and helping distribute the paper, then come Tuesday, they quit. And then got all the way down to Thursday, then this manager finally quits. And so anyway, maybe about 4 months prior to that, he had recommended to me that I change the name of the newspaper from Caught Up to something else. I forget the name of it. And so anyway, once all these people quit, you know, I got to get up off my ass and go to Knoxville and see what's going on. So I go there, and the first store I go to, it's another paper sitting next to mine.
The name.
With the name.
Oh, shit.
That he wanted. And so, of course, he had already had my whole list of stores and what I was giving to them. So, like, for example, the paper is selling for $1. Well, you got to get the store a little something, you know what I mean? So we may be giving them 10 cents, 15 cents, or whatever. So he knew, had my list, knew what all these stores was getting. So he'd go in and say, oh, yeah, you know, we're not going to be doing this paper anymore. This is the one that we got going on, you know, and we'll match the rate, or either we'll give you 5 extra cents or whatever the case may be. And, you know, after I went that weekend, I immediately decided not to continue the business and not to try to fight it because, number one, I'm not even local. You know what I'm saying? Two, I don't even love this. You know what I'm saying?
That was really a sign on the low.
Yeah, it was a blessing in disguise. You know what I mean? Because I was only making $60,000 a year, like I was telling you. You know what I mean? So it definitely was a blessing in disguise. It did not feel good at the time, but it was, you know, a lot of lessons learned from the situation.
Absolutely. I was just about, that was going to be my next question. How do you vet your future managers and mm-hmm. business partners and stuff? Do you move about it a little differently now? Because you can't be hands-on with everything.
Like. Right, but I'm definitely very visible. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, all of my businesses, they see me all the time. You know what I'm saying?
I pull up
all the time. I don't let them know when I'm coming. I'm always, I'm definitely present. You know?
Right.
So they know. There ain't no shit like that happening these days. I got all my finances, my paperwork, all this stuff is, you know what I mean, sealed up. So
as you get into you said you did the party bus scene, right?
Yep. So that was the next thing I did. So the next thing I did was Party Bus Kings. And that was the first business that I ever did that was very successful, you know, that I made 6 figures from, you know, net. And so that was a business that I did not particularly care for either.
So how does that work? You buy a bus, you get a DJ.
Yeah, so I bought a bus, and then basically people just rent the bus out. And so they just play music off of their phones and stuff like that. It has a nice system in there, TV, stripper pole, lights, all of that stuff. And I was also driving the buses as well. You know how it is in the beginning of the business.
Hustling,
you can't, you know, afford to have all of that staff. So that was one reason why I didn't like it, is because, you know, I like to party just as much as the next person. But, you know, when you're
sober,
you got
to drive the bus and everybody kicking it back in.
Yeah. So that was one. Two, just the whole transportation industry. You know, at the time, I couldn't afford to buy brand new buses. So some of the, we only had 2 buses, but, you know, they were kind of dated, you know, and would have a little different transportation issues, maybe, and just got it at the shop.
Yep.
And at night, you know, I'm getting a call from the driver. You know, it's just, it was an extremely stressful business. I could never go out of town and feel like, you know what I mean? I always feel like my phone was going to get to ring and it was going to be some type of issue, but the thing that I did learn from that business, two things came from that business. One, it set me up to open up Hookah Hideaway because it gave me the finances that I needed to get back into what I love, which is the whole entertainment and nightlife industry.
Mm.
But two, it also taught me how to deal with stress. Like, for me, it's like really hard for me to get stressed out, you know, now.
Gotcha. What? How long did that last, the bus?
About 3 years.
Okay, okay. Mm-hmm. You had a successful run with the bus, mm-hmm. and so next up was the Hookah Lounge.
Yes, next stop was the Hookah Hideaway, the infamous Hookah Hideaway, which I own right there off of Jesse Hill Jr. Drive. I had that spot for 5 years. I decided to voluntarily close it December 31st of 2018. And that was just because, number one, the neighborhood was changing. So it was just a lot of crime, a lot of violence and stuff like that in the neighborhood. Two, it was like my starter spot. It was super small. It was only like 1,000 square feet. And I had already owned Escobar with 2 Chainz at the time. We had already owned Members Only as well. And I had already just, you know, was in a position to do bigger and better, you know. And so I just felt like I needed to close the door on that to be able to focus on some other things that would be better, you know, for my brand.
So you spoke on entertainment and artist management throughout these different business adventures. Were you doing artist stuff and had?
I was not. And it's crazy, like, because I get so many people, so many artists, even to this day, like recent as this morning, you know, in my DM, you know, like, you know, trying to send me their music, asking me about managing them. And I'm like, man, I don't. And a lot of people don't even know that that's what I used to do. You mm-hmm. know what I'm saying? And, you know, I'm like, man, that's not what I do. And they're like, yeah, but you could do this. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, and I'm like, you know, nah, I'm good, man. But no, it is not something that I continue to carry on. I'm around a lot of artists. At probably every single one of my locations, we have a night that has artist showcases, mm-hmm. open mics, different things of that nature. Of course, I'm business partners with 2 Chainz, and I'm very close to his music career, and mm-hmm. he shares different things with me when he's about to put out albums, and I get to hear his music, you know, ahead of time and different things of that nature. But no, I'm not currently managing artists or anything of that nature.
So what drew you and 2 Chainz close together, like?
Well, so number one, how I met 2 Chainz is because when I owned the Hookah Hideaway, it became wildly successful after the first year, and I decided that I wanted to open up another lounge. I actually used to own a lounge in Macon, Georgia as well, Posh Ultra Lounge.
Okay.
But anyway, I had decided I wanted to open up another spot in Atlanta, and I wanted to be in Castleberry Hills because when I first moved to Atlanta, I lived in some lofts that was in Castleberry Hills. And coming from a city like Nashville, where you don't see a lot of black-owned establishments and different things of that nature, I was very impressed and inspired by the fact that there was just a street, you know, of black-owned, you know, restaurants and lounges right next to each other. And that's where it used to be my stomping grounds when I first moved here. So wanted to go over there and be in that area. And so started looking for something. And long story short, and it's actually like a crazy story behind it, because back to that newspaper company that I lost, I ended up taking a trip to Jamaica around this time that I was looking for a spot in Castleberry Hills. Mm-hmm. Came back, went through customs. There was a warrant out for me in Tennessee that I didn't know anything about from the printing company, because the last couple of checks bounced on to them because dude stopped putting the money in the account and all this type of stuff. Well, the amount was $5,010, which is the felony level in Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So when they got me at the airport, you know, they reached back to them and they said, yeah, we're going to come and pick her up, you know, hold her for us. So, you know, I was in a situation where I had to be extradited back to Tennessee. But during this time, right before I had went to Jamaica, I had applied for a spot in Castleberry Hills. And actually, while I was in jail, I'm calling, talking to one of my really good friends who has my phone, and he calls the realtor on 3-Way to check on that spot for me. I'm like, man, you know, I need to hear some good news. You know what I'm
Absolutely.
Saying? Could be in a situation where, like, you don't have any bond or anything like that. You don't know where they come, when they're coming, different things of that nature. And so anyway, so he calls that realtor. And the realtor tells me that, you know, that particular location, they didn't want a restaurant or lounge to be there. He was like, you know, but there's actually another space, you know, available in Castleberry Hills. He was like, on Peter Street. He was like, you know, it's a little bit further down. It's not really where all of the happenings and all of that stuff is right now. But it's owned by a local, you know, rapper that's, you know, pretty famous. You know, he's actually said that he's heard of you and he would like to be business partners with you. You know, y'all could do something together.
Word. That was through the realtor, right?
And that was through the realtor. Now I'm in jail, you know, at this point, listening to this. And so I'm just like, okay. Now, I'm not really like a starstruck person at all. So, it was more so the opportunity, you know what I mean, and all the possible opportunity. Because at this point, you know, who's even thinking that this is really even going
right,
to come
just somebody,
you know what I'm saying?
Like said.
Exactly. You know, so I'm like, you know, well, who is it? And he was like, 2 Chainz. And I was just like, oh, okay. I don't know, but it felt like the whole world stopped, you know what I mean, when he said that. And it really felt like that it was going to end up being something, you know what I mean, from that. And I remember, excuse me, getting off the phone and going back up to my cell and telling my little cellmate, I was like, yeah, I'm about to open up a little spot with 2 Chainz. You know, I'd already told her, like, yeah, I got a little spot who can hide away, you know, this and the third. You know, people doing jail, they trying to paint the picture
always,
of who they are, you know, on the outside.
Absolutely know what it is.
Right. And so, so once I got extradited back to Tennessee, and mind you, the charges were later thrown out and all of this stuff. This was just like 3 weeks wasted sitting in jail. And it was
Damn.
The longest time I've ever been in jail. Like I said, I've been arrested before, but always just for small, little, stupid stuff, nothing major or anything like that. So this was definitely like my longest stay there. And so anyway, got extradited back to Tennessee. Came back to Atlanta, and literally the next day, I met with 2 Chainz at the Hookah Hideaway. And he didn't even hear this story until like 2 years later. So he had no idea that the past 3 weeks.
Fresh out.
Right. It had been like that for me. And so when we met each other, I mean, we just clicked. Like, a lot of people that know him and know me, they tell us that, like, we act alike. Mm-hmm. Kind of like our swag is, you know, a little similar. We definitely think alike. We just like really, really, you know, connect. And he's an only child. So I think he, you know, kind of values having somebody like me that, you know, number one, he can trust, you know, that is completely taking care of business, you know, when it comes to the hospitality businesses, you know, that we share together. And we've got, you know, plans to do more businesses and things of that nature. So it's definitely been a blessing, you know, to meet somebody like him. I think, you know, it's really important that when you get opportunities, number one, you have to be ready for them.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? But, you know, also, of course, it's definitely a blessing and humbling that he has shared his platform with me to make me even larger, you know, than what I was.
With that being said, how do you tell 2 Chainz when you don't like how you be like, that ain't it, bruh?
That's funny, you know. I've never told him. But of course, you know. Now he's very realistic, you know. Mm-hmm. He knows that he's getting older and he wants to kind of put more into the younger generation,
with the true
which is
university.
Why he's bringing you know, different artists on and things of that nature. So he's very realistic. I just tell him when I like something.
There you go. Did you ever ask him what it was about that he saw in you to make him make that statement in the first place?
Well, I didn't have to ask him because he was very vocal about it. Even before Escobar had opened, he had a little birthday dinner there, and he was just telling them, he was like, you know, he was telling his whole family, you know, he was like, you know, this girl caused her. Number one, what he was telling his mom, he was like, you know, she got her own fans. Look, you know, it was like just showing, you know, like little different things that people were saying about me on the line and stuff like that. And he was just telling them, you know, she calls herself a serial entrepreneur and she definitely is that, you know. And he always brags about me. He's very like outwardly spoken about like how he feels about me and how proud he is of me. Even like when I was doing Remedy Salon Suites, you know, he called me one time. He was on the road. He was just like, man, he was like, you know, it's niggas that I know that have like much more money than you and they don't move the way you do. Nope. They don't, you know, grind the way that you are. And just like even like with the staff, I have a really strong relationship with our staff. I'm always giving back to them and stuff like that. And that's like very impressive to him. But yeah, he's never short of, you know, telling me or like, you know, like for Christmas, you know, he gave me this, you know, pendant. But definitely, you know, shows his appreciation and is outwardly spoken about how he feels about me.
As an entrepreneur, you want those things to speak for you, right?
Absolutely.
No. How real quick, paint me the picture of the time frame of the concept. Hey, let's put a, you know, an Escobar right here to the time it opens. How long does that take?
Yeah, so it took us 2 years. That actually was the longest spot that it took me to open. Lots of blood, sweat, many, many tears. You know, the music is his love. So I literally do most of this stuff. It'd be me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, of course, he invests, you know, but and that was my first, like, real spot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Escobar, Atlanta, the downtown location. So it took about 2 years. I invested the majority of the money that I had to my name, yep. you know, into that spot. And, you know, they gave us hell with trying to get the liquor license and all of that. You'd be surprised at, like, a lot of these neighborhood associations in Atlanta, I mean, they can't stand it.
Even in
so many of us, you know.
Even in the A?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so many of us black people are opening up these businesses and stuff. Luckily, we control the city hall and the city council and the different things of that nature. But when it comes to the neighborhood planning unit, a lot of those, you know, we don't participate as much as we should, you know yeah. what I mean? And so you have a lot of the white people that kind of control that. Mm-hmm. And it's so different in how they vote for us to get licenses and how they vote for some of the other white owners of restaurants and different things of that nature. Now, once we go up to the liquor board review, it's totally different. But I mean, that whole neighborhood planning unit came to that liquor board review meeting trying to fight, you know, us getting this liquor license. So
wow.
It was definitely extremely emotional. They just didn't want something that was like a lounge base, you know, to be in Peter Street. You know, on Peter Street, you still have a lot of residential communities and people that have residences that live there, old white money,
yeah.
things of that nature, and they just can't stand that the area is starting to change a little bit with the stadium being so close as well.
Okay. What was the thought process in opening up the second one?
The thought process was just, you know, Escobar has been very successful for us. We did like $4.1 million last year. Mm-hmm. And so it just was, hey, we need to further this brand. It always originally was, we're not just doing one Escobar. This is just the beginning. You okay. know what I'm saying? So I even want to do more in other cities and franchise and different things of that nature. But in doing the second one, it was, hey, we need to further this. You know, we got one downtown. You know, you're from College Park. You know, you from the South Side. Let's put one on the South Side. So, and we have been getting a lot of people that have been asking us, you know, about putting one out there. So,
we hit Escobar's up. That was when I was still eating wings.
Yeah, yeah.
Wings was fire. You don't eat wings anymore?
Nah, cauliflower wings.
I ain't had none in a couple
only
days.
In public.
I bet, you know. I've been
wings
in the gym trying
himself.
To get my little body right, so I understand.
Yeah, the wings was good down there. Y'all keep that corner popping right there. It wasn't like it was as far as, you know, 255 used to be popping up the street there, but y'all got that corner kind of live. I like the vibe there. Escobar is a place we frequent. So, yeah, y'all done y'all thing with that. Is based off Pablo Escobar, that's where the name come from, or is it something different?
It is,
different?
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And when y'all expand it to different cities, it's going to be that theme as well.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Super dope. What can we expect from Snoop moving forward?
So in 2020, just a few of my goals include I want to do two more Remedy locations. So I got one downtown. I want to do one on the South Side. And one like somewhere Smyrna, Marietta type situation. Thinking about getting into the trucking industry or maybe like non-emergency ambulance service, you know, doing something like that. continuing to grow, you know, my restaurant businesses. Several of them are fairly new, like Escobar South. We just opened that about 5 weeks ago.
Oh, shit.
Crave. That spot opened the first week of November of last year, and Members Only is not even a year old. So definitely want to take some time to continue to grow the things that I have going on, and then just continue to invest in real estate more. Like we're about to close on. So he owns the building that Escobar Downtown is in,
okay.
and then we're buying the one together that the South Side location is in. So want to continue to also, you know, invest in real estate.
Dope. Congratulations on the Atlanta Black 40 under 40.
Yeah. Oh, thank
as
you.
Well.
Thank you. I appreciate
that's
that.
That's super dope. Before we get out of here, do you have an end game for your career? Do you have your eyes on a specific prize?
I don't ever want to end, man. I don't ever want to end. I don't ever want to retire. I want to continue to I think like one of the things that like continues to like make me just go hard. One, it's definitely in my nature, but I get so many people that are like always telling me that they're inspired by me. So just like continuing to tell my story, sharing the hardships and how I've overcome those. And just, you know, helping other, you know, black women. You know, I've got a daughter. I got pregnant the first time I had sex. I had my daughter when I was 15.
Damn.
So just, you know, a lot of other things that I'm passionate about, being able to give back. So I think that as I get older and maybe if I'm not opening up as many businesses aggressively, you know, but spending more time into, you know, just giving back and continuing to inspire and help people.
Super dope.
Yes, most definitely. We definitely appreciate you coming by and dropping these gems on us at the On Deck TV podcast. Anything you want to shout out for our social to tell the people where to go find you at?
Absolutely, man. Number one, I appreciate y'all having me.
Of course.
Just finding me, you know, interview worthy. I can be contacted through my email at info@dillardhospitality.com. My Instagram is Who Is Snoop. I always say I answer every DM I get, as long as it's not anything stupid. So
manage me.
Yeah. Right. And then I also do one-on-one business consultations. I specialize in restaurant consulting and helping people open up their own restaurants. So y'all definitely holler at me.
Absolutely. 100%. Whoisnoop.com. Absolutely. Hey, we appreciate you, Snoop, for sliding. Hey, don't go nowhere. On Deck TV podcast.
Yep.
Hey, what it do, people? It's your man Animal Brown checking in, giving you a reminder of our latest review up on Patreon right now. Travis Scott Jack Boys. Yes, Travis Scott crew in full effect on a Jack Boys project that dropped at the end of 2019. Lou and I rate, review, debate, and discuss. See what his little camp hitting on, man. Have you peeped, like, groups are slick back? Like, labels? 2 Chainz dropped his label joint. Dreamville had the big release last year. Travis Scott dropped his shit too, man, low key. You might be surprised by it if you haven't checked it out, man. So patreon.com/realville. Support the real and get some good content at the same damn time. Hit the link in the description. Holla. We are back. It's the On Deck TV podcast. It's your man, Animal Brown.
I am Spike Lou.
Hey, Snoop is out here cooking. You hear me?
Yeah, she eating.
Woo.
Much love, much knowledge. Glad of dropping off a couple gems. That was a dope interview, man.
Absolutely, man. We got to go back with her in a little bit to see how, you know, what
pull
she
up
got.
The Escobars, man. Get some of the wings.
Nah, we good on the wings.
All the 2 Chainz.
Some cauliflower wings for sure. Y'all ain't Snoop, y'all gotta
got
to get cauliflower
cricket sound
wings.
Producer, you got the cricket sound back there? Cauliflower wings.
Hey, man, it's time for wins and losses. Okay. First off, let's hand out a W to 2 Chainz.
Speaking of 2 Chainz.
He invested in what's being called the Airbnb for cars, Toro. All right. And he also dropped off a new compilation featuring his TRU camp, No Face, No Case. Smart play with the Toro investment.
Yeah, Toro was popping a couple times when we were in Miami.
Yeah.
It started down in Miami and went in Revolt and all of that. So you get the nice little foreign cars. It's going to be a nice little stunt. He's going to put his sauce on it. So people going to start using it, I believe.
Would you use it?
Yeah, why not? Uh-huh. And you're like, it ain't regular rental car stuff. You
big
know what
boy
I'm saying?
Shit.
Yeah, you can just pick up somebody's car that got the nice shit.
Big Jeep or something. Yeah. Big dog clean shit.
Yeah, that's fine.
Handing out another W or possibly L to Erykah Badu's new vagina scented fragrance. My question, are you copping for Valentine's Day?
No. Erykah Badu is the biggest troll on earth. Shout out to her, man. She's like, they were talking about this in what, People? Time Magazine?
Everything. Gwyneth Paltrow has one too, though. She has a vagina scented candle.
Is it Gwyneth Paltrow?
Yes.
It's her vagina?
Yes. Ugh. It's $75. Ugh. But this Erykah Badu, you can cancel that. Now I ain't finna get that. Have my
she
gal wearing that shit.
$69.
This one right here? Yeah, Gwyneth Paltrow $75 for the candle.
Not paying. Nobody's paying $75 for Gwyneth Paltrow scented vagina.
Yeah, that's nuts.
That's not.
This, I'm not. My guy not coming nowhere near this fragrance. I'm not going to be walking around with overalls and a top hat on after you get a whiff of that shit.
You already dressed like that, tough.
Absolutely not. Handing out another W to Yo Gotti. He was faced with the decision to either buy back his masters by dropping a bag and copping or getting a bag dropped on him for the sale of his masters. He ended up taking the advice of Jay-Z and buying his masters back. Shout out to Yo Gotti, man. Is that a W or would you take in the bag?
It's a W for Yo Gotti. Yo Gotti had a great Breakfast Club interview, and the reason that it's a W for him because he's a boss. Mm-hmm. The difference between, I feel like, someone like him and someone like Mace, Yo Gotti has an imprint and a way to leverage his music a lot in the future, movies, licensing deals.
That's true.
That way that Mace just doesn't have that, just to compare the two. So that's why it's a brilliant move by Yo Gotti, because he's a boss and he's in position to use his music and the masters to his music.
Absolutely,
some
man.
Take it that bag.
And he's into the long term investment. It's a long term play.
Effects.
When you buy your masters. But he said it was he looked at the bag that they offered him.
Come on with it, boss.
Hey, listen.
Like the dream took it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we reported on that not too long ago. Did. The Dream took that bag.
And so did DJ Mustard.
Yeah, DJ Mustard took it.
Yeah, they took some of it.
Yeah, they kept, for some of their masks.
Yeah, because that bag is nuts. Yeah. On Decker of the Week, man, this week, rest in peace to A$AP Rocky's DJ, DJ J. Scott. He passed away on the 2nd. He was actually the official DJ of A$AP Rocky and crew. Now, Scott also was a producer for the camp, and he managed various artists and served as creative partner to A$AP Mob. Cause of death is unknown.
Is that the third one of the A$AP people that have died?
I know it's two. I know Yams.
Yams.
I don't know. I don't know if it's a third one. I don't want to put nobody prematurely in the grave, but I don't know.
Man, condolences to his family, the whole mob, man. I heard that he was a real stand-up dude. All of them got their styles from him.
Yeah.
Which is saying a lot. So I know this impacted them heavily. So rest in peace to him.
Absolutely, man. You got something to put me on?
On Netflix, Hip Hop Evolution. Mm. Quit scrolling past it, because I was doing the same thing. I said, let me check out one episode. That shit is fire. I just finished it this weekend, like all 12 episodes. That shit is good as hell, especially if you're a hip-hop fan. It'll bring back memories of, you know, it makes you start thinking when the first time that you start listening to rap in your area, because they go from the Bay to Florida, like where hip-hop started individually in these places. That shit is good as hell. Check that out.
No doubt. That's funny. Mine is Netflix related. Mm-hmm. We always talk about people that have these competition shows and they end up winning, and we never hear from the winners. So D Smoke, who won Netflix Rhythm and Flow, his album came out over the weekend. It's called Black Habits, and it's fire.
Sir's his brother.
Put some respect on his name. He won the whole damn Netflix show.
Sir's brother, because he's Sir's brother.
That shit is fire. His album is crack. Yeah. Check it out. You would like it. I don't know if you got a chance to check it out.
I ain't checked it out yet. I'm going to listen to
it. It's like To Pimp a Butterfly. It's what that should have been. Let me say that.
Sir Ona?
Yeah, he is.
That comes from a talented musical family, I hear.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, check it out, man. Finally, we get a reality show winner that actually could produce something.
Who was behind it? Like, when you won the show, did they do the album and shit?
What do you mean?
Like, did winning, what was the prize, did winning that show consist of, like, someone on the show doing his album?
Oh, no,
like,
no,
was T.I.
No.
involved, anything like that?
No, it was just cash. It was a quarter million. That was it.
That's cool.
So you could take
more
that.
$250, buddy.
And run your album that way. And that's what he did. And he gave us good product. Shout out to D Smoke.
Nice.
Hey, guys, listen. At On Deck TV Podcast on Instagram, youtube.com/realville. Make sure y'all check us out. Subscribe. Do all that good shit.
Yes, and continue to support the Patreon. New content is going to hit you consistently there. We appreciate you guys supporting the On Deck TV Podcast and Realville Media. We are out.
Peace. Yeah.